from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Queen Akim, in today for Michael Krasny. Following a nod from city council members last week, San Jose will enter into exclusive talks with Google to sell land for a massive transit center office and retail project around Diridon Station. The development could bring as many as 20,000 Google employees to San Jose and reshape the way many South Bayers live, work, and commute. But could the project also exacerbate an already acute housing shortage? We'll take up the issue and discuss the impact of tech companies on cities and communities. That's all coming up after the news. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Queen Akim, in for Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum, and on this hour, we are going to talk about a vote that happened last week where the San Jose City Council voted to start negotiations with Google to sell the company 23 acres of city-owned land near the Diridon Caltrain station. Google plans to build a massive transit-oriented village that would include up to 8 million square feet of office and retail space and bring up to 20,000 Google employees to the city. But community activists are concerned about the pressures the development will put on wages and housing prices and the overall impact a Google campus will have on San Jose's culture. In this hour, we'll learn about Google's plans for San Jose, and we want to hear from you. If your town is home to a large company, what are the benefits and drawbacks? But before we get into all this, I wanted to take us out to Diridon Station, where I met up with San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo yesterday. He showed me around the area for the proposed development, and he shared his views on the project. Mayor Sam Liccardo, thanks for coming on to Forum.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
So we are on the corner of San Fernando Street and Montgomery in downtown San Jose. I think this is one of the 16 publicly owned lots that San Jose is hoping to sell Google?
It is. Locals here in San Jose would better know this spot as the magical place beneath the neon dancing pig of the Stevens Meat Products sign.
Yeah, what's that sign about? Did there used to be a store here?
There was actually a sausage factory and warehouse here. This is a predominantly industrial area in the city. There were a lot of canneries, but one time this was the industrial heartland of our city.
What's happened since the industry's gone away? What's been happening to this area?
For the most part, this is a collection of various different buildings, a lot of vacant parking spaces. But where we're standing today was actually designed to be a ballpark. We were aggregating parcels starting about a decade and a half ago with intentions of bringing the A's down here when they expressed their desire to come. The Supreme Court decided they weren't coming, so this would be right field where we're standing today. Instead, it'll become part of the Googleage.
So we can see the SAP Stadium from here. It's a few blocks up, and right next to us is the Diridon Station. The plan before Google even came along was to make this Grand Central, Central Station of the West.
The vision is that Diridon will become the Grand Central Station of the West. We have currently a sleepy little transit center where Caltrain and Amtrak and a few other lines meet. It will be bustling within a few years as BART, high-speed rail, bus rapid transit, and other lines are brought into Diridon.
We've been hearing a lot about how this is going to be sort of a new model for the tech campus. I guess one of the things that people are thinking about is often tech campuses are very closed off. They're sort of this fortress where everybody eats and drinks and has coffee, dry cleaning, almost everything you can do within the walls, and there's not a lot of interaction with the outside community. How are you guys rethinking this?
Well, months ago when we were meeting with Google, we made it very clear what our vision was as a city for what the urban village would become. We wanted a vibrant center. We wanted retail and restaurants and open plazas and something that would be very inviting for the public. It just so happens that Google has a very similar vision, and they are implementing that vision now in cities like London, where they're building out quite a bit, and they want to bring that model here to San Jose.
So we've heard all about the benefits of what Google can do, and I think I've even heard that it's attracting other developers to come into the area. What are some of the concerns that you have?
The elephant in the room, of course, is the great divide that has emerged in our valley. We know tens of thousands of our residents are being left behind as the rising costs of housing are driving more and more folks out. And so we're very focused on the affordable housing issue. Our valley has largely grown on the suburban model, and we know it's not sustainable environmentally. It's not sustainable in terms of traffic congestion. Companies come here recognizing there's an opportunity to grow, and there are a lot of smaller towns around us that don't want to grow. They don't want the housing. They don't want the affordable housing. And we have the opportunity to do that right here in downtown San Jose. So this is critical for the future of the whole region.
Mayor Sam Liccardo, thanks so much for showing me around the Diridon Station area and for coming on to Forum.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure.
We are back in the KQED studio, and right now I'm joined by Kim Walsh, Director of Economic Development and the Deputy City Manager of San Jose. Welcome, Kim.
Welcome, Karina. Thank you.
And we also have Jeffrey Buchanan, the Director of Public Policy at Working Partnerships USA. Welcome, Jeffrey.
Glad to be here, Karina.
Hey, so Jeffrey, I wanted to start with you. We just heard from the mayor who showed us around and sort of touched on some of his concerns. But I know at the city council meeting last week where the council voted 10-1 to go ahead with negotiations with Google, there was a lot of anxiety about this project from community members. Can you tell us a little bit about what you heard?
So I wouldn't call it anxiety. I would call it excitement, but tempered excitement. Certainly, this could be a game-changing project for the city of San Jose, but the question remains, game-changing for who? Right now, we know this project could bring up to 20,000 jobs downtown, but also we're already starting to see property values begin to rise in the footprint of this project. What that will do in terms of increasing the cost of housing and leading to further displacement and unaffordability, particularly for renters. You need to remember that this area around Diridon Station, about 66% of households in that area are renters. And even for communities outside of Diridon, in East San Jose and South San Jose, some of our pockets of affordability, as more and more high-tech, high-wage workers come into the area, what's that going to do for housing prices? So we need to figure out what to do about affordable housing. Similarly,
yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say, similarly, even though there's a lot of high-wage workers that will come downtown, the other big concern is that, you know, as you alluded to in your conversation, tech campuses typically, and I'd imagine this would be no different, rely on an army of subcontracted low-wage workers to really make those campuses hum. So the shuttle bus drivers, the cafeteria workers, the janitors,
the baristas,
the security officers. Exactly, the baristas. These are the folks, and you heard from a number of them talking at council last week, where they're concerned if the city government is going to sell some of our most valuable public lands and grant all these other incentives that it's going to take to lure Google downtown, how are we ensuring that the jobs that come with Google are good jobs, family-supporting jobs, the kind of jobs that allow people who've lived in San Jose for decades to keep here and not get pushed out by rising prices?
I wanted to introduce Richard Florida into the conversation. He's a professor at the University of Toronto, where he's the director of cities at the Martin Prosperity Institute. His latest book is The New Urban Crisis. Welcome, Richard.
It's great to be with you.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've heard a lot of what Jeffrey Buchanan was saying, but it seems to echo a article you wrote in the MIT Technology Review. And sort of the thesis of it was that there was a time when mayors and economists thought high-tech development was an unalloyed good thing, that more high-tech startups and more venture capital investment would lift all boats. But we're starting to see a little bit of a backlash to that idea, and you sort of coined this new term. You're saying that it's not like lift all boats, but it's winner take all. Can you talk about your ideas a little?
Well, I think over the past 15 or 20 years in America, we've developed not only a winner take all economy, where the rich get rich, the middle class falls apart, and the poor get even poorer. We have a model I call winner take all urbanism, where the San Francisco Bay Area and Southern California, Greater Los Angeles and New York and Boston and Washington D.C. and a few other places reap the majority of the spoils. But the problem is that even the winners have, as Jeffrey said, get this great divide. And as the mayor said, one thing I'm heartened by is I thought Jeffrey explained this aptly, and Mayor Liccardo did. And I think, you know, you couldn't have a better person in the Office of Economic Development than Kim Walsh. I've known Kim for years and years, and she's spectacular. I think Jeffrey said it right, though. If we're going to give over you know, a bunch of acres in a core downtown of a great city like San Jose. We need to make these high-tech companies, Google in the Silicon Valley, Amazon in Seattle, these high-tech anchor institutions have to become part of inclusive prosperity. And I think there's several dimensions of that, but Jeffrey said them so aptly. Mm-hmm. One is we've got to talk about affordable housing, not just housing for high-paid knowledge workers. We've got to talk about workforce housing. But the other part of it, which Jeffrey said, these high-tech companies are creating six-figure-plus positions. They know how to motivate, engage, incentivize high-tech software knowledge workers. And they're creating the divide by outsourcing and treating these contractors, these precarious workers, horribly. Why not use some of what they know about job upgrading to make these service jobs better, make them part of their own employment structures, pay them better, the food service workers, the food prep workers, the people who work in the gym and the healthcare center? And I think they've got to, and the point I make in that piece is, if they don't get ready for the backlash, in the Bay Area, in Seattle, in Boston, high-tech companies for the first time in my life and maybe for the first time in American history are no longer seen as our great innovative savior, but they're beginning to be seen as the enemy. So it is very much in the interest of these companies, not just local government, to get with the program and be part of not only building a great campus for their workers, a great city for all residents, and an inclusive approach to prosperity in which all members of San Jose and communities can benefit. So I think the time's ripe to make this case.
Well, it's Kim Walsh, what about that? You're the Director of Economic Development in San Jose. I'm curious, is the city thinking about these issues in terms of the economic development and the negotiations you're having with Google?
San Jose has long been concerned about pressures on working people due to the high cost of living in the Bay Area. We were concerned about that before Google, and we'll continue to keep that front and center in our considerations. It's very much an important part of our city identity to remain attractive to people of all income levels. That being said, the partnership with Google and the development of the Dearden area is an incredible chance for a Bay Area city to really get it right in terms of locating really the first significant tech employer to consciously want to locate in a transit-rich location, in an urban form development that's accessible and open to people. And San Jose is unique, very unique, compared to other cities in the peninsula and in San Francisco. We've had no new office construction downtown since 2010. We haven't had a tech headquarters locate downtown since Adobe 20 years ago.
And why is that? Why? Because it does seem like San Jose is sort of an obvious spot. It's a city, you know, it's right near Menlo Park and Palo Alto. Why is it that San Jose hasn't been able to attract that sort of, attract those businesses?
Yeah, and we've been, you know, arguing for years it's time to more evenly distribute the jobs in the region. San Jose actually has a shortage of local jobs compared to our housing. Since 2010, just for example, San Jose has developed one housing unit for every three jobs. The rest of the Santa Clara County has developed one housing unit for every nine jobs. So the growth has been north of us. And San Jose people have had to drive up the peninsula to access jobs, which actually has eroded quality of life in the whole Silicon Valley. We're excited now because tech companies are rediscovering urban areas, finally rediscovering downtown San Jose, and they're coming for the access to the transit and the access for talent. Google and other companies on the peninsula have looked at where their employees actually live. And as I like to say, Google is already in San Jose because so many of their employees live here. And with the city's commitment to add 120,000 new housing units between now and 2040, this is where the talent is going to be. And so we're excited that Google has understood that. It's going to be an interesting countervision for Silicon Valley development compared to the new Apple headquarters. I think that's a whole nother story there.
I wanted to sort of unpack some of the numbers in terms of economic impact. What's the money that's going to come in? What's the money that's going to go out? I'm wondering if you have sort of the general overview.
Well, I think the key points are the land will be sold to Google at fair market value and no incentives will be involved. Some of the parcels, two of the parcels, are city-owned land. And the rest of the parcels are former redevelopment agency-owned land. the proceeds from the sale of the redevelopment agency-owned land will, by state law, have to go back to paying off redevelopment obligations.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, you know, is the city going to be entering into really direct negotiations in terms of affordable housing and wage growth, the stuff that Jeffrey Buchanan's group has been promoting for? I'm curious as to what that conversation will look like and what leverage the city might have in terms of getting commitments from Google.
Well, this is obviously just the first step in a process, and we're committed to a community engagement process, which will be underway shortly, where we'll do a lot of listening to the different elements of the community, the neighbors nearby, organized labor, environmentalists, arts community, business community. A lot of people want to be listened to, and we will take that input into our interactions with Google. There are already, because we adopted the Diridon Station area plan, some specific requirements in place. For example, 15% of housing developed in that broader 250-acre Diridon Station area must be affordable housing. I think you know San Jose was the first big city in America to adopt a citywide inclusionary zoning ordinance. We have a housing impact fee, so development will be subject to those standards. And then we'll have an area that will be open to negotiation and conversation.
We are talking about Google's plans for a San Jose campus, and we'd love to hear from you. If your town is home to a large company, what are the benefits and drawbacks of that? You can call us at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website or Facebook page, or you can email us at forum.kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. Jeffrey Buchanan, at that meeting, the city council meeting, we had a lot of citizens talking about this idea of community benefits. It was sort of thrown around, like, what kind of community benefits are we going to get from this project? I was wondering if you could sort of flesh that out for me and sort of articulate what folks are looking for.
Yeah, so in the run-up to this vote, we saw a lot of interest from community groups, small business leaders, people in the labor movement, and racial justice groups across the city, and wondering, as this deal comes together, is it going to be something that benefits all of San Jose, or what exactly will this agreement look like? And so in the days before the vote, we came together and launched a new coalition as a part of Silicon Valley Rising to really raise this conversation around community benefits. When we think about this deal, though Kim's right, perhaps there are no tax incentives on the table right now, but there's a series of public benefits that Google needs to make this project come together. First, there's the sale of the public lands. But then there's also the upzoning that's going to need to happen. For both the private and the public parcels, Google's going to need to build denser and higher than is allowed now under the general plan to make a development of this scale happen. Right now, the Diridon Station plan only calls for 5 million square foot of retail and office space for the entirety of the area plan. Google wants to go to 8 million square foot. We know that they're going to need to rezone parcels that are currently parks or light industrial to be office or retail. It has been alluded to, there's $8 billion in public money, including some taxpayer-funded infrastructure from last year for Measure B, potentially with another ballot measure around raising money for sales tax for Caltrain. So a lot of public money is going into support these lands, and this property will only be more valuable. And a lot of that value is going to accrue after the city has already sold these lands. So we think that there's strong models out there for ensuring that the public benefits from this sale and this value that's going to accrue to Google and Trammell Crow and others involved in the deal. And so we want the city to really look to examples, both examples that Trammell Crow and Google have been involved with that have included, in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars in community benefits for things like affordable housing or other types of community benefits.
Do you mean this is community benefits that communities have already seen? And what communities are those that you're talking about?
Yeah. So, I mean, you can look in Mountain View in some of the land deals around the development of Google's office space and also some of their work to develop some housing in the city of Mountain View in lands that they own in North Bayshore. Google has committed to building affordable housing at a higher rate than currently the city policy calls for, or agreeing to side deals for community benefits for certain investments in things like affordable housing, transportation infrastructure, public spaces. These are the kind of things in large deals like this, it's typical for cities to ask for, to try to, you know, ensure that the city's benefiting from all these things, from public land sale to infrastructure investments to upzoning of the kind of things we're talking about. But then there's also great examples, I think, in Oakland, in LA, and other parts of California around community benefits agreements. And so this is when groups of community stakeholders directly engage with developers and set terms around things like affordable housing, job standards for things like living wages, labor peace, supporting contracting, subcontracting standards to ensure that the jobs that come into these projects are good jobs and that we're trading off these kinds of public benefits for public goods. So we think there's strong examples out there, and we hope that the city's leadership will really work with community and labor and small business to really ensure that we get the best deal for all of San Jose and hopefully a community benefits agreement.
Yeah, and Richard, Florida, these are sort of things that you suggest, but you actually suggest that tech companies need to take a more proactive role, not just sort of be a passive negotiator, but actually really start entering communities and talking about zoning and bringing in affordable housing. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Everything that's been said is exactly right and exactly where we have to go. And, you know, it's becoming clear to me that this is a real test case for the future of tech-based development in America. And what a great thing for San Jose, a city that has not seen this. You know, as Kim said, these companies have come roaring back into cities because that's where the talented, creative people they need want to be. And in the past, they've been extracting. They've not only taken community money, they've gotten good deals on land, they've put their headquarters, they've extracted benefits. And what's happened? Google, Amazon, Facebook, Apple, Microsoft, the largest companies, the most highly valued companies in the world, are now seen as villains. Never mind Uber and Airbnb. They're now seen as villains. People in San Francisco said, we want you guys out. They had a ballot measure that lost. We want you guys out. Now it's time for them to really show the world that these very highly profitable, very valuable companies that say they're on the cutting edge can be good urban stewards and good urban citizens. So, of course, Silicon Valley Rising and the city of San Jose have to keep pressure on them. But it's time for these companies to buck up and do what's right, to engage in inclusionary prosperity, affordable housing, and
job upgrading. Okay, we are going to pick up on that thought. And we are talking about Google's plans for San Jose campus. And we're talking to Kim Wallisch, Director of Economic Development for the city of San Jose, Jeffrey Buchanan with Birking Partnerships, and Richard Florida, professor at the University of Toronto. I'm Queenie Kim, and you are listening to Forum. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Queenie Kim. And in this hour, we are talking about Google's plans for San Jose campus. And we wanted to ask you all to join the conversation here. We want to learn, if you live in a town that's a company town, what benefits and drawbacks are there to that? You can call us at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Or you can post the comments on our website, on Facebook, or email us on forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. And if you have any questions with our guests, we've got with us Kim Wallisch, Director of Economic Development and Deputy City Manager for the City of San Jose, Jeffrey Buchanan, Director of Public Policy at Working Partnerships USA, which is a labor group, and Richard Florida, University Professor and Director of Cities at the Martin Prosperity Institute at the University of Toronto. His latest book is The New Urban Crisis. And Kim Wallisch, we've been hearing from both our guests, Jeffrey and Richard, about this notion about tech companies having to be proactive in terms of building more affordable housing and helping to reduce housing prices. I'm wondering, are you seeing any indications that Google is taking this advice when it comes to the Diridon project?
Absolutely. I think the city couldn't ask for a better corporate partner than Google, given its experience around the world working with communities. We know that Google has a demonstrated commitment already to supporting affordable housing and definitely intend to talk with them about additional support for affordable housing above and beyond the city requirements. Google's expressed interest in developing housing themselves. They have wanted to do this in their headquarters location in Mountain View, and because of that city's concerns and limitations on growth, haven't been able to realize their vision there. This site is right next to downtown San Jose, where if you haven't been there lately, come down and see the extraordinary housing being built. We've had 1,400 housing units in the core in the last 2 years, built 1,500 more under construction, 7,000 more that are either fully approved or under review. So there's a tremendous amount of housing commitment that the city has made in this area, and we really look forward to partnering with Google to see what they can contribute. It's clearly in all of our interests to put housing in Silicon Valley's city center, right at the heart of this convergence of transit. It's going to be good for everybody.
We have a listener comment. William writes, when a business offers to locate in your city, you say welcome, especially when there are not enough jobs in the city for your citizens. San Jose is the only city among the 10 largest in the country to have fewer occupants in the daytime than in the nighttime. And I think that might be a question for you, Richard Florida. This notion that, you know, it's always a good thing if tech comes in.
Well, I think that's the argument we're all trying to make, that we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And that's the situation we're getting into in places like New York and San Francisco and L.A., where people have said, we've had enough. Our housing prices have gotten so expensive. We want to kick the buses out, and we want to have a moratorium on tech development. So I think that's why San Jose, a city, a great city, that through the leadership of people like the mayor and Kim have rebuilt its urban fabric, have used public dollars to create transit-oriented development. And now a tech company comes in and it has the opportunity to be a good partner, to show people that we're not the kind of taker, extractor that you think we are. We can help rebuild and make a city that's inclusive for all. And again, they may not do that just out of altruism. The pressure has to be up. But let's agree to be part of these community benefits agreements that Jeffrey so eloquently talked about. Let's agree that we can provide not only a great campus environment or a great urban environment for our workers, affordable housing for other residents, as Kim said they're looking to do, but most importantly, those jobs. If they come in there with minimum wage jobs for their contracted out workers, that's not right. They should be committed not only to creating great jobs for their core software and tech employees, but creating very good middle class jobs. And they have the money and they have the profits, the super profits to do it. They can provide a better city for San Jose, better jobs for San Jose residents, an example for other tech companies of how to rebuild America's middle class.
And Richard Florida, it was interesting reading your article that in a way we've been here before. For example, that suggestion of yours where tech companies could work with the wider business community and government to upgrade these jobs. In your article, you mentioned that we've seen this before, that in the last century, a lot of the manufacturers took this tact. Could you tell us about that?
Well, you know, I had a dad with a seventh grade education who worked in an eyeglass factory, and he's a very smart man without a formal education. He'd sit me down as a young boy. In fact, we'd go visit the factory where he worked. He said, Rich, when I started work here in 1934 as a 13-year-old helping to support his family, I had an awful job. It took nine of us, grandma, grandpa, and our six to seven of us kids to make a living wage. I came back from the war. You know, he served as an infantry soldier, stormed the beaches at Normandy. I came back from the war as if by magic. I had a good job. I could get married, buy a home, put you through boys through Catholic school and college. Well, we as a society decided that we were going to turn low wage, terrible manufacturing jobs into middle class jobs. We would pay workers more. We would allow them the right to join a union and collectively bargain. We would create some undergirding legislation to create a social safety net. We took bad jobs and made them good jobs so we could have a middle class. Well, you know, 65 to 70 million Americans do those kinds of jobs you talked about. They're the baristas and the food servers and the healthcare workers and the daycare support workers, and they're toiling in very precarious, contingent, low-wage conditions. I think we owe it to them and we owe it to ourselves to upgrade those jobs. And who better to lead that effort than our most profitable and innovative companies that treat their knowledge workers like proverbial gold?
We're going to get a call now. We have Arthur from Palo Alto. Arthur, you're on.
Hi. I think this is a wonderful subject, and I think it's good for San Jose to be attracting companies like Google. One of the things that we have in the Bay Area is we've been having an increase in number of jobs compared to the housing. I heard the woman from San Jose mention that even in San Jose, they're adding one housing unit for every three jobs. So how about incentivizing cities to build housing by saying you can only add jobs when you add housing? The idea is that you add one job for every housing unit you add, and rationing it that way.
Kim Wallish, what do you think about that idea? I know sometimes there are a lot of these common sense ideas that often aren't as easy to implement because of the bureaucracy. And I'm wondering if you could sort of talk about why can't we just have a law? One job, one house.
Well, San Jose would, if probably the only city in the South Bay that might actually conceptually be supportive of that, never would want another layer of government to tell our cities what to do. However, San Jose's whole strategy is about balanced growth. Our general plan really recognizes that it's not about jobs or housing. It's about jobs and housing and pacing those out over time in an even way. That's what's going to be good for San Jose fiscally. That's what's going to be good for when our people can work closer to where they live. It improves traffic congestion. It's a solution to climate change. You have to locate the jobs near where people live and near transit. That is the only vision. And San Jose actually wishes that more cities in the Bay Area would live by those balanced growth principles.
We were talking about Google's plans for a San Jose campus, and we just heard from Kim Wallish, Director of Economic Development for the City of San Jose. Jeffrey Buchanan is also with us. He's the Director of Public Policy for Working Partnerships, and Richard Florida, Professor at University of Toronto. If you'd like to join this conversation, we would love to hear from you, especially if you come from a town with the big industry. What are the benefits? What are the drawbacks? You can call us at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Or you can post your comments on our website or on Facebook or email us at forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. And we're going to go to caller Ken from South City. Welcome to Forum.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the line.
Hi, this is Steve, not Ken. But
sorry.
I did call because I'm a native San Franciscan and I've seen my city become overpopulated, too congested. It's a trial to get from one place to another, even to go park your car to go shopping. But has anybody ever taken in consideration where's all this water going to come from? Why we import more people into our state? And also, what about the impact on wildlife when we're building more buildings, which means that we're giving up freedom of space for the animals that live in the Bay Area? I mean, nobody seems to address that. It's all about growth is good, and I don't know if growth is that good anymore. I think that it comes to a point where it can also become very detrimental.
Richard Florida, I think that's a sentiment we hear, but what makes this project interesting is, as you note in your article, is that companies are leaving the suburbs or trying to move away from the suburbs, these tech companies, and maybe start being a little bit more mindful of those concerns going into urban centers where there's more transportation and, well, the water is a whole separate issue, but that there are, you know, that it's more resource heavy and concentrated.
Well, you know, it's funny. I did a PhD 30-some years ago, and one of my colleagues wrote a PhD on just this back then. You know, he was a Californian. We went to Columbia University. He wrote on this issue, how you're going to run out of water 30, 35 years ago. So it's an ongoing concern. But you're absolutely right. You know, that's why Google is, you know, it has its great corporate campus, which is there, and many others. But people are voting with their feet. They want a better life. They want to, as Kim said, live close to where they work. They want to spend time with their family. They want to have amenities and great things around them in walking distance and not have to depend on a car. And that's why these companies, you know, I think Google learned it first when it opened that the facility in New York City. And it got so many great people applying, people went crazy. And then London, and now it's saying, you know, well, San Francisco is kind of filled up and expensive. Let's go to San Jose, a place that's a great city. I mean, it's a great urban fabric, and we can build something there. And I think the real issue is how do we make this innovative, tech-driven economy work, not just for the privileged third, but for many more. And I think that's why this is so important. You know, you have such a great test case on your hand. Can a tech company working with local government, with community nonprofits, will it engage in this kind of community benefit? And, you know, Google has a great opportunity here, not just the city. Google has a great opportunity to prove everything that Kim is saying about them absolutely correct. We are your partner. We can be a partner with the city. We can create inclusive prosperity. And I think it's really in their interest. You know, got to keep the pressure on them, but it's in their interest to really step up and make this work.
We've got a comment from one of the listeners. Jack writes, why can't companies like Google and Twitter invest in infrastructure and transportation? Imagine if they partnered with BART to make that a complete system around all areas of the Bay instead of those huge tour buses circumventing public transit and causing traffic. And Jeffrey Buchanan, that is a sort of interesting phenomenon with the tech companies here in the Bay Area. Rather than sort of working on a collective, you know, transit, they've decided just to go for the private route for their workers.
Yeah, I think in conversations we've had with folks in the tech industry, transit is a growing concern. And I think certainly we should recognize with this development, Google is sending a message that the industry needs to look at transit-oriented development, that this can be a positive. But, you know, as you said, the tech shuttle drivers, it's actually, I think, the seventh largest transportation system in the state of California is this network of shuttle bus drivers that bring tech workers down from San Francisco down to the South Bay every day. You know, I think just given where we are in transit, as I said here, just benefiting Dearden Station alone, we'll see $8 billion in transit investments. We really need to look at how the industry, how community, how labor can work together to improve our transportation system. You know, it's not the tech industry alone, I feel, that has a stake in this. And so it's really one of those areas where I think there's really room for growth, room for finding win-win opportunities. You know, really, but ultimately, the tech industry, ourselves and the community and others, this is a kind of, you could look at this as a kind of three categories of areas we really need to work on going forward. And the city, the community, labor, Google and the tech industry really all have a stake in this. It's solving our transit problems, solving our affordable housing problems, and solving our wage problems. You know, one in three families here in Silicon Valley do not earn enough money to be able to support themselves at this stage. So if we can align those three factors and see where our mutual interests lie, and I think we can really find some win-win solutions, win-win-win solutions. You know, this Google project is really a chance to set a new narrative, to set a new way that we can address these issues going forward.
Kim Wallace, we have a question for you, it seems, from a listener. And David asks, why is San Jose selling as opposed to leasing the land? Can't the city retain better control if it retains ownership?
Yeah, that's a good question. So most of these parcels are parcels that were owned by the former redevelopment agency, and they are absolutely required to be sold under a plan that was approved by the local body as well as by the state. So the properties, the Sarah properties, absolutely need to be sold because those proceeds are needed to pay off redevelopment debt.
And we've got another one for you, it seems. Could someone speak to how Google might be incentivized to build a proportion of the housing needed for such a large influx of people on Dearden site? And I guess it seems like a question either for Kim or for Jeffrey. How can they be incentivized, and how are we seeing other cities doing this?
Yeah, I think that's going to be open for conversation. I mean, I run into Google workers who live downtown and go to my dog park and are already here and are hoping that they'll be able to work at the new downtown facility eventually. So, yes, part of this will be net new job growth, but hopefully a lot of it will be people that are already here accessing those jobs closer to home. The city has had some time-limited types of incentives to encourage high-rise housing in the downtown, which is very challenging from a cost point of view with all of our city requirements and our height limitations. We're actually looking at revisiting potentially the height limitations on certain parts of downtown. That alone could be an incentive for additional housing to be built.
We have a call. Yeah, I think that's, oh, go ahead. Sorry, Jeffrey.
Oh, no, I think it's really encouraging. The one thing I would note is that, you know, right now Google is developing commercial office space in two locations in Mountain View. And for that, those, I think they're each about a million square foot facilities or additions to facilities. They pay about a $25 square foot fee through Mountain View's commercial linkage fee program. So they're directly contributing for every square foot of commercial real estate they develop. They're contributing to a fund for affordable housing. You know, unfortunately, the city of San Jose does not have a commercial linkage fee, but I think it sets a good example of what the kind of scale of a contribution for housing could look like as this development goes forward. And I would say, to Kim's point, you know, I've heard from janitors and food service workers who work for Google who live in San Jose, and they're concerned about being priced out of this community. So while, yes, there are some engineers and other folks who will be closer to this new facility, there's still others within the operations of Google who are going to be directly impacted as the price of housing no doubt continues to rise in the region.
We have a call from Mark in Pacifica. Mark, welcome to Forum.
Yeah, thank you very much. One thing that I think that anybody who wants to shake this out in their head and realize the value in the hidden treasures, I mean, the previous comment about partnering with BART, BART's already put their stake in the game. They put those 19 little dots from Fremont to Diridon. They said we'll build track when there's a reason to do it. But you also look at the price of land. Like, I live in Pacifica, and I work in San Francisco downtown in Soma. I'm able to have a three-bedroom house on a quarter of an acre of land for less than $1 million, where I could barely be able to have a two-bedroom apartment in the city on Howard and 9th Street, for example. And you look at San Jose, you've got Gilroy, you've got Tracy, you've got all these satellite cities where they could actually become very attractive to people that want to work at Google because the public transportation to get them from Gilroy to Diridon is already there. The public infrastructure and the willingness to put the tracks there from Fremont to Diridon are already there. So they're opening up corridors that make it so that the city doesn't have to change in order for this to work really, really well. And those places can become, like, I consider Pacifica to be the Malibu of San Francisco. And that's personal to me because I moved from Newport Beach to Malibu as a small child so that my father could have less commute and affordable real estate. And as you know today, the real estate in Malibu is not affordable. But maybe Gilroy and Tracy are the Santa Barbaras and the Valencias of Los Angeles to San Francisco, if you want to make that analogy.
We have another phone call from Anthony in San Jose. Anthony, welcome to Forum. Hello, Anthony. Hi, is this Anthony? San Jose?
No, this is Maureen.
Oh, sorry, Maureen. But you are on Forum.
Yes,
sorry, we're having a little glitch with our information system here. But yeah, let us know what's on your mind.
That's fine. I'm within walking distance of the Diridon station. I'm in a neighborhood that on Virginia and Delmas.
So what do you think about this project?
Well, I'm very concerned because it's more congestion and into an area of San Jose that has rich, rich history. And I do know that on the books, it's planned to run either the BART or the high-speed rail right along Virginia so that it connects with Diridon, which, you know, that's great for commuting, but it bisects our entire neighborhood. And we've got houses here that are 130 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some beautiful houses around there, old Victorians.
And it's just, it's going to, the neighborhood's been struggling to lift itself up because it used to be a very low rent district. You know, now it's like $1,200 a month just to rent a bedroom. Doesn't guarantee you a place.
So are you, I guess, Kim Wallish, I guess traffic is a big problem or a concern amongst folks. What have your studies been showing, and what are the steps that the city might be taking to sort of alleviate that concern?
And I want to thank Maureen also for pointing out the beautiful, historic, single-family neighborhoods that are near downtown San Jose are a real asset of our city. And we look forward to preserving those historic homes and the neighborhood feel surrounding the Dearden Station area. Matter of fact, we had a six-year public outreach process that included a very robust Good Neighbor Committee and a lot of work with the neighbors that led to the approval of the Dearden Station area plan and the vision there. So it's true that we are going to have high-speed rail coming into that area, which connects the Central Valley to Silicon Valley, and as the previous caller said, really expands the labor market or potentially access to low-income housing. We're also going to have BART coming in, so we're doing extraordinary planning with Caltrain, high-speed rail, and BART to manage the construction process really over the next 9 years.
But are you concerned
once that,
that
is completed, though, those people are going to have tremendous, the best access to transit in the Bay Area. It'll be the most transit-rich location. And as you know, transportation is the second most expensive cost that any household faces. So it will help with affordability to have that massive convergence of transportation. But obviously, especially during the construction period, there needs to be good planning.
So am I hearing you correctly that maybe the traffic won't be so bad if once all the construction is done and a public transportation comes in? Or are there any studies that the city has done in terms of will there be more cars coming into that area? Or what would the traffic be? What's the traffic impact?
Well, clearly, we're studying both traffic and parking, and it would be disingenuous to say that as we have more smart growth, infill development, and more density, there's clearly going to be more traffic. But the whole point is to create an environment that is walkable and bikeable and transit-oriented. So for especially the people who live and work in and around downtown San Jose, central San Jose, they're not having to use their cars to get around. Matter of fact, our goal is to reduce solo driving from 90% of trips down to 50% of trips by 2040. So this Dearden Station area plan is really the new model. It's really the counter vision for how the rest of Silicon Valley needs to start developing, I believe.
We have a listener comment here from Jennifer, and she says, "We live in an age with such convenient forms of communication. Why can't Google and big companies have satellite offices throughout the United States? They could utilize space and infrastructure that already exists, provide jobs in depressed cities, and share some of the success we've seen on the West Coast." Richard, Florida, that seems like a question for you.
Well, they do to some degree. I mean, Google has an enormous facility in New York City. It's building another massive facility.
Although I don't know that that's the kind of place that Jennifer is talking about. I think she's talking maybe about the Rust Belt or...
That takes us back to winner-take-all urbanism, that the fact of the matter is that in the United States and around the world, talented and creative people have clustered. They've clustered to be around each other. They've clustered to be around economic opportunity. They've clustered to be around great cities. And the fact of the matter is that our talent is not evenly distributed, and that's caused the great divide and the backlash that put Donald Trump in office. That's a bigger problem, but these companies are following the talent. Yes, they have tried. They have tried to put smaller installations in other places, but it hasn't worked well. Mm-hmm. That in winner-take-all urbanism, the winners are winning, and the winning is getting bigger. One of the things that I wanted to point out, though, and with transit, I think that the big wake-up call here for all of us really was Trump's election. And before that, I think there was a sense, oh, the federal government will help us. Oh, the federal government will help us on transit. Oh, maybe with affordable housing and housing subsidies. Now I think everyone in America has had this incredible wake-up call that the federal government is not only out of the game, it's pulling out in a very abrupt fashion. Mm-hmm. We've got to do it for ourselves. That's why I think this project is such an important test case. If this can work in San Jose, if this can come together in San Jose, it gives a lot of hope for other communities to emulate the San Jose experience, investing in transit, investing in good urbanism, getting companies on site as partners, creating inclusive prosperity. So I think the stakes are bigger than just the San Jose project here. I think the stakes are here. Can we do something that really creates an inclusively prosperous kind of urbanism and move that model to other communities around the country?
So I don't want to put a rain on your parade, but we do have a listener who writes, "I admire the genuine intention of your guests to implement this plan, But let's be real. As a resident of the South Bay, the diversity that is San Jose will disappear. We're going to become another city that is taken over by well-paid millennials. I think I'm just going to let that one stand as a comment, but I wanted to go to a last listener call, and that is Anthony from San Jose. Anthony, welcome to Forum.
Thank you. My question is about the effects of urban parks that this development and others like it are going to have. I'd like to know which parks are going to be paved over, and I'd like to know what the city is going to do to replace them and even increase them. And just as a little background, you know, I live in Stevens Creek in Bascom, and there are no decent parks around. There's little half lots, little tot lots, but nothing resembling a real urban park. The county has lots of parks, but they're all in the foothills that you have to drive at least a half an hour to get to. They're not urban parks.
Well,
what are we going to do to preserve and increase our urban parks?
Kim Wallace, that's actually, there's another comment from a listener who makes a similar question. What about our local parks? We have about 30 seconds here, wondering if you could answer that question.
The Dearden Station vision includes a substantial increase in urban parks and public spaces and really opportunities to reclaim land for public use along the Guadalupe River Trail and the Coyote Creek Trail. It's definitely part of the vision.
Well, thank you for that. And that is the end of this hour of Forum. We were joined by Kim Wallace, Director of Economic Development and Deputy City Manager of the City of San Jose, Jeffrey Buchanan, Director of Public Policy at Working Partnerships USA, and Richard Florida, Professor and Director of Cities at the Martin Prosperity Institute at the University of Toronto. I'm Queenie Kim, and you've been listening to Forum. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.